On July the 9th, the people of South Sudan celebrate the second anniversary of their independence. In preparation for this day of celebration, they were called upon to pray for reconciliation and to break the cycle of violence and conflict that is still besieging the new nation. The President, Salva Kiir Mayardi, has set up a committee for national healing, peace and reconciliation. And together with church leaders of all denominations, a week of prayer for national reconciliation concluded on Monday, the eve of the independence anniversary. I spoke to Sister Patricia Murray, Executive Director of Solidarity with South Sudan, a consortium of over 200 religious congregations committed to training teachers, nurses and pastoral personnel throughout the new nation. She says that all church leaders were actively involved, and she speaks about the situation in the new nation today.
I would say that in the last few years, progress has been made in terms of development. New roads have been built, old roads have been repaired, and there's a sense, particularly in Juba, of an infrastructure being constructed, like government departments and the departments that a state needs in order to function. And particularly when you're creating a new nation, you really have to build government both at local level but at national level.
And you yourself and your organisation are very involved in building up infrastructures, aren't you?
Yes, we, like others, we're committed to building and capacity building particularly in the area of teacher training and training nurses and midwives, and also training people to be active within the diocesan structure in throughout South Sudan. I think for me it's very moving. We're just celebrating the first graduation of the first group of nurses that came to the Catholic Health Training Institute in Wau. So 16 young men and women will be leaving the institution at the end of July, fully trained as certified nurses in the New Sudan. And they have been extremely well trained. I was very, very touched really to be in a local hospital and to hear a story of a family coming in with a very sick person, and they saw some of our students there. They're dressed in a green overall, and they were heard to remark, "You'll be all right. The green doctors are here."
And these students of yours, who are not students any longer, will they be sent out throughout the nation?
They're sent out throughout the nation. That's the great thing of this, of the health training centre in Wau. It's training students for diocesan hospitals and clinics, but also for hospitals and clinics run by the government, or indeed projects run by different NGOs. And as you know, there are many South Sudanese overseas who, in fact, are trying to help build the new nation. Some of these have constructed small clinics in their local areas. And I know that we're training some local people on behalf of a village, but sponsored by South Sudanese, particularly from the US and Australia.
Now, you speak particularly of Juba, where you say there is evidence of progress, but we do hear of ongoing conflict in other regions of South Sudan. What is the situation?
I mean, there's conflict at what I might call the edge in the area of Jonglei State. There has been conflict, some of it tribal, some of it disaffected members of the former Liberation Army, who are looking for positions, but also looking to have power in their area. However, even in that respect, you know, during my visit, I heard of a number of these generals and their small militias who had signed agreements with the national government and who are being incorporated into the army. But there is a measure of unrest, and I think, you know, even between in local areas, it can be over pasture land, some wanting to grow and some wanting to herd their flocks on the area. If you like, a way has to go. Having defeated an external enemy, in a way, the people of South Sudan have now to face, in a sense, the conflicts within. And these are conflicts that are that are old histories, and that require, in a sense, the skill of coming together to build a nation. And that's not an easy thing to do. I think we sometimes expect a transformation overnight. Most of us belong to parts of the world that have had to struggle with divisions and with different opinions, different histories, different stories, and to grow a country. And I think that's what we're looking at in South Sudan. And, you know, recently you will have read that a National Committee for Healing, Peace and Reconciliation has been set up by the President of South Sudan, Salva Kiir.
Yes, yes, in fact, I was going to ask you about that.
And that's in a sense, I think, a recognition that it's not a quick fix. It's a long process of, first of all, naming the divisions. And I think Salva Kiir very wisely, the chair of this committee that he appointed is Archbishop Daniel Deng Bull, who's the Episcopalian Archbishop, and the Vice President is the Emeritus Bishop Paddy Thabane, who's well known for his activities in peace building. And both of these, and the committee also includes Christian and Muslim leaders and representatives of state, but mostly representatives from civil society, women and youth, and various other constituencies within the community. And I think the idea is to have a respected group such as this to lead the development of a process of reconciliation. But you don't begin that process, as they said in their opening statement, you know, it's not something that begins without a great deal of preparation. So they're going to have a listening process, I think very wisely. And they mentioned it twice in their statement, that they're going to create a space for listening and consultation. And what they want to hear is ordinary people throughout the whole of South Sudan naming what their concerns are as they seek to build a new nation. And I think this committee is very realistic. It's saying we have to look at the roots of our current situation, and we have to name what has happened to us during 5 decades of conflict. Like, you don't suddenly, if you've been trained for war and you have conducted war for 5 decades, you don't suddenly leave behind the habits of a lifetime. I remember a young man during my first visit to South Sudan in 2006. He said very clearly, he said, "I've been taught how to make war." He said, "Now, please come and teach me how to make peace and how to build a peaceful nation."
I remember 2 years ago, there was so much jubilance when finally independence was declared. What is the feeling amongst the people today?
I would say it's a mixture of feelings. On the one hand, I think a great gratitude to be a new nation. But I think a greater realism that declaring a new nation is only the first step. You then have to make a new nation. And I think one of the challenges that I see is that people need to leave behind what I might call a sense of entitlement. There's almost a feeling sometimes that we fought a long war, so we're entitled to receive the good things of this world. And I think one of the challenges is the whole area of corruption. I mean, I think there's a feeling, and there's a named experience in the country, a feeling that some are benefiting through this new nation and the peace dividend, and others aren't. And many communities want very basic things like water and food and housing. Land is an issue. You can imagine, you know, land deeds that might have existed in the past don't exist after war and after the destruction of buildings and records. But also, part of the tribal system in South Sudan was the paramount chief was the person who organized the land that each person got. So you're dealing with if you like, two systems, a tribal system, say, in terms of land allocation, and also then a new kind of global system where land is, I might say, owned and you have deeds and rights. And one of the things you hear talked about in South Sudan is a problem of land grabbing, where people just come in and occupy land. So there's a very careful process required to decide how to give land to people who are landless, also how to restore land to people who have been absent for many, many years, and then how to apportion land in this new country. Because land, as we know, is a very precious commodity, and though there are great empty spaces in South Sudan and an absence of cultivation, because people have forgotten how to sow and how to cultivate land.
So, it's so true, but land tenure, land rights are basic
for
future development as because otherwise people don't invest in land.
Also the encouragement of pilot projects. One of the things we're involved in is, I visited it, we have a couple of agriculture projects, and a new one is being developed beside our health training institute in Wau. And it's a partnership. I think it's a very good model, because it's a partnership by Caritas Italiana, also Solidarity, Trocra from Ireland, and a local NGO called HARD. And all of these provide different capacities in helping local people, on the one hand, to learn new skills, to gain an income from working the land, also to gain some benefit from the crops that are and the produce that are produced there. But also, it enables us in Solidarity to grow food for students to eat, and hopefully there'll be some surplus. And food will be available then in a local market at a reasonable price for local people. Because one of the things that really strikes you is, I mean, for example, one sukuma wiki leaf costs one South Sudanese pound. I mean, that's an exorbitant price it's like one leaf of cabbage. That's the equivalent. And when people earn so little, they might earn 250 if they're doing well a month. So food has become very expensive because so much food is imported into the country. So now it's to try and develop the capacity to grow, not only for one's own family, but to grow a surplus that's available then for the market, because the type of agriculture to date has been subsistence farming. So you're just growing enough to survive, and a little more perhaps to sell to make school fees for your children.
Sister Pat, just one last question. Speaking of this week and then day of national prayer for reconciliation, were Catholic representatives involved as well?
There were. There were Catholic. Bishop Paris Taban is the Catholic representative on the committee. But also throughout all the churches, I thought it was beautifully planned, because the Muslims were to begin the prayer on Friday in the mosques, and then last Sunday the Christians and Catholics were praying for peace on Sunday, and then there was a national day of peace on Monday in Juba, where all the denominations were gathering. And Salva Kiir has put great emphasis on the leadership for this peace and reconciliation process and this healing process being led by religious leaders, and that it's, in a sense, it has to begin at that spiritual level. It's not to say that there isn't a place for political negotiation and obviously community building and building new links across communities. But it's been acknowledged that the root of all peace building and the beautiful word shalom, that fullness of life that the Hebrew scripture speaks of, that every person yearns for, and that they want in their own personal lives and for their families. So this is an impetus that's beginning from a spiritual space, to create space for good listening to take place, so that hopefully every voice will be heard. And I see the committee members saying, you know, if you don't feel your voice has been heard, come and talk to us in person. Come to our office, come to our representatives in the different states, because together we have to as they say, we have to find a new attitude in South Sudan, and a new language, really, to be a language of peace and not of war.
Sister Pat, you make us want to come to Sudan. You sound like you speak of it with such love.
I do, and South Sudan has changed me in many ways, and both my love for the people, but also what the people who have, when you see suffering in the face of young and old, you realise that our own small sufferings are inconsequential, but also when you see their deep love of God and their belief that God is watching over them, is protecting them, and will lead them to a new place. And I think it's that deep spiritual heritage that is there within the Christian community, within the African traditional community, within the Muslim community. I think by drawing on those resources, I do believe that's part of the future for South Sudan.